Now we're going to get out our crystal ball and take a look into the future with the help of two giants of the publishing world. Sarah Miller, who is the editor of the highly respected Condé Nast Traveller magazine, and Andrew Warren, managing director of Condé Nast Johansson's. As some of you know, I spent 12 very happy years working for Johansson's myself, and so it's a great delight to me to see that after all these years, Andrew still does not have a single grey hair in his head, a testament, if anyone needed, to the health-giving properties of champagne. Sarah Miller and Andrew Warren.
Have we got microphones?
Yeah, we're all fixed up.
Well, I think we're probably the interlude and light entertainment after all those amazing graphs and figures. Following on from the George Clooney of Frequent Flyerdom first and then actually yield management, we're going to talk about the business of being a hotelier in the world of consumers, and it's going to take the form of a conversation. Andrew, as you probably all know, looks after and is MD of Johansson's, which is a guide of all of the best hotels according to his inspectors. And I edit and have edited for the past 13 years since I launched it in 97, Condé Nast Traveller, which is a magazine and is an entirely different proposition insofar as we don't take the all-inclusive encyclopedic approach. We take a kind of highly edited personalised views. There are points at which we share. So I'm going to ask Andrew a few questions. We very much want you guys to feel that you can jump in. This is a much more interactive stage show, if you like. I'm sure Peter will stop us when we overrun our marks. I'm going to kick off.
One of the reasons we're sitting down is we expect quite a bit of response from you.
I thought age was the principal.
Yes, and age.
So
we were following your example, Peter.
Given that I tend to work in the magazine industry at least 2 years in advance, which may come as a shock to some of you when you phone me up and say, it's February, we've got these lovely Valentine's offers, we're doing chocolates on pillows and all the rest of it, and I'm going, no, I'm on to 2011. We're going to talk about future trends a little bit. So I'm going to ask Andrew, where do you see Johansson's and your business going in the next 10 years?
I think, like most people in this room, I would certainly hope can you hear me right, actually? I would certainly hope that the business would be the brand leader in its market sector, and I think that accounts for a lot of people sitting in this room.
And obviously we've been talking a lot about the weak pound being quite good for business and here in the UK. How have you seen that affect your properties that you look after in the guide?
I think most of them have done very well by
the... Hold the microphone up.
Not that much.
Sorry. You've woken a couple of people out of the back.
I know it's a bit of a jolt. I think most... sorry, what was the question again? You completely thrown it. We said this
is going to
be...
We
said it's going to be a light-hearted, a very weak pound.
You've got no talent. You're not coming on the show next week.
But I
did get them to laugh.
What are your hoteliers doing to kind of, you know...
The weak pound, I think, has been a huge benefit to particularly to city hotels, particularly London hotels. And I see that, I think we can all see that going on for a while. I think the euro and the dollar are going to be strong against the pound, or less weak, and that means that there are going to be a lot of people visiting this country. They're not only here now, but they're coming to see us, and they're coming to stay with us. I think it's very important. The weak pound is actually a big advantage, I think, to the industry at the moment. Would everybody agree with that as a destination?
Of course, consumers, as we know, even high-end consumers like the ones who read Condé Nast Traveller, they're always looking for a deal. I mean, that has been the case since I launched it, just in different degrees. Mm. But technology has completely revolutionised the whole industry, whether you're at the magazine end of the spectrum or delivering a hotel product. How do you see hotels adopting technology to actually give a great experience to the consumers? Because it can be done in lots of ways.
I think hotels have adopted and embraced technology to get more people to stay with them. In other words, the segmentation of opportunity has been driven by technology. In other words, the opportunity to take people online, to take bookings online. But also, I think the guests themselves are probably looking, once they're with the property, are looking for more of an experience. It's interesting to see how many hotels are now offering a lot of additional experiences to simply accommodation. The number of cookery schools that are growing in the hotel industry, I think, is a very strong and a very worthwhile enterprise. It's working. People are looking for more when they stay. Does everybody agree with that?
And obviously, with value for money never being more relevant than it is now, actually, how are you seeing your clients kind of coping with offer great value for money? Are they actually developing new strategies in terms of assets such as building a spa or adding a restaurant or doing those kind of quite big things? Are they doing it in smaller ways?
Countries. So it's a very big spread, which equally is encouraging people to travel not only within their own country, but also to other countries. Peter, do you want to ask?
No, sorry,
that follows through.
So what Peter's just saying is that he wants to ask me a question, but we want to encourage you to ask questions, and maybe you might even ask me a question every now and again.
Well, I do actually have a question for you. How much has the consumer changed since Traveller was launched?
I think the consumer has changed phenomenally. We talk about sort of, you know, baby boomers, and we talk about Generation X, and we talk about how even within my lifetime, the pattern of travel and hotel experiences has changed phenomenally. When I was growing up, I remembered a grandfather who had fought in the First World War, never went anywhere apart from Venice on his honeymoon. His wife, my grandmother, 20 years younger than him, only went in a plane once when she was 90 to Paris, couldn't understand what all the fuss was about, you know, up and then down, and only had time for one G&T. My father was National Service Libya, took us as kids down to Spain and France. I've now travelled quite a lot, but my daughter has been everywhere from Bali to Brazil. These are your future consumers. They are very, very, very well travelled. And what's more, because they've travelled with their parents, a lot of them, whether they've been on package holidays or whether they've been kind of, weekend hops on city breaks, they have a level of expectation that they will carry through to when they get married and when they have kids and what they want from honeymoons. And they are really very intimidating. They have a very great understanding of the hotel industry. They're the future.
What can hotels do to anticipate the consumers' needs in the future?
I think you've got to be 10 steps ahead in terms of your technology. I mean, we've just redesigned our website just as a magazine, and obviously we're not hoteliers. We have actually now partnered with the White Label, so we will be offering our consumers the chance to book rooms online through this White Label with all of you guys if you have a look at the website. I know Andrew's in the process of redesigning his website, so you have to be ahead of technology. In years to come, and not that far away, China's been mentioned a lot. Everything will be done on your phone. Everything. You won't need a laptop. Everything will be on your phone. It's already happening in China and India. I think the other big issue is sustainability and green. I mean, our kids have been educated in their schools about recycling and sustainability in a way that we actually are so far behind on. And they are, but it's absolutely the brand of the magazine, and that's key.
Thanks.
May I ask Sarah a question, if I may? The readers of Condé Nast Traveller, one assumes, Sarah, are among the highest spending individuals who buy and regularly read a certain publication. What can you tell us about the spending habits of your readers? Can you give us a little crumb of comfort to take away from this conference to reassure us that there are still plenty of people out there, I hope you're going to say there are, to whom little dips in the economy generally don't necessarily spell radical economy in terms of their behaviour. When you drive up and down Hyde Park Lane, there are some very expensive motor cars being driven. If you visit any yachting harbour on the south coast, there's some lovely craft being used. I have always taken some comfort from the fact that even if the general trend for the industry is poor, we in this room, I think, represent a number who have managed to buck that trend so far. So I'd like to hear you say that you've still got a lot of readers who might be looking for a deal, but it doesn't need to be cheap. What do you say to that?
Okay, well, the short answer is yes, and yes again. The slightly longer answer is, even before there was a recession, people like Sir Terence Conran were looking for a deal. You know, you saw that the sale of the Great Eastern and it turned into the Andaz. I mean, everybody, by nature, if they're successful in business, is looking for a very good return on their investment. That has to be the case. Our readers have the highest household income of any glossy monthly magazine in Britain. I know I come from a stable of Vogue and GQ and the others, but in fact, ours are much higher because our average age is about 40, 45. Quite a lot around 50. We're talking about a male-female split 50-50. We haven't seen any significant dip in our readership. In fact, we've grown year on year, period on period, every year since launch in terms of our circulation and our readership. We have many more subscribers than any of our closest rivals. We now have around about 40,000 subscribers. We have 10,000 overseas subscribers and growing. We have very strong response to what appears in the magazine, whether that's in advertising or in editorial. I'm representing both halves here. My publisher would thank me. The key thing that we find, we did a little survey not long ago where we took a very leading tour operator, a highly specialised safari operator, and hotel consortia, representation groups, out of that level of responses, we had 10 conversions out of 11 as an average. Our readers are actively purchasing our magazine at £3.80, soon, I'm afraid to say, going up to £3.90.
But it's free when you get outside, by the way, a copy for
it's almost as good value as the caterer and hotel caterer.
Yeah, absolutely. And we, you know, we find very good value, I agree. And we do a lot of different kind of cross-marketing at different price points. So we have a whole sort of subscriber strategy. We like to partner with hotels. We find it incredibly effective, particularly with our awards, which I think is a very interesting area that a lot of hoteliers want to get involved with when our magazine is placed in the hotel rooms, just as Andrew's is. There's hundreds of ways that we try and get out there and put ourselves under your noses and under your consumers' noses.
Can I just bring in the subject of age, since Peter and I mentioned it a little bit earlier? We are very intrigued by the whole baby boomer generation, which quite clearly is still moving through the market, through the population. How many of you in this room have profiled your guests in terms of age? Because we feel, and certainly from our guide sales point of view and the people who are using our website, there are a lot of 50-plus, there's a big 50-plus market out there, which is actually has a great deal of disposable income. They've paid the mortgage, the children have gone, and they're probably the last people who are on final salary pension schemes in this country, and they have plenty of disposable cash. Could we just have a hands up of those people who know that their hotel attracts that kind of profile in terms of age? 50 plus? Not many. That's interesting. Good. Oh, thank you, sir. It's just that the market, there is a big market out there, and those people are hungry to spend the money.
That was a very broad question. Yes, with respect, guess, Andrew. Yeah. Would anybody care to challenge that assertion?
Yes.
I'm going to go back to future trends because I think that's probably what you want to hear about. So in addition to the coming of mobile phone, internet, the tablet, interfacing in one instance I've seen, which will be coming soon, where a company in California has actually developed something which they say is more mobile than your mobile phone. According to them, a mobile phone isn't mobile. Fingertips are mobile. That's what you carry with you your whole time. And they've actually developed a set where...
Markets, if you like the low-cost airline market, where you're buying a seat. It's a very simple transaction. But the hotels, in many cases that we recommend, are quite sophisticated and complicated, and they have a lot to offer. And bearing in mind that when you make that phone call or you make that booking, you probably want to know rather more about the property or rather more about the property, what the property is offering, when you make that call. So we still believe that the a lot of, obviously, the research is done on the internet, but a lot of people still pick up the phone.
The other problem with the internet is, and what we find in the, what I find in the magazine industry, particularly the travel industry and the hotel industry, unlike the fashion world that I, newspaper world that I came from before and that our company represents, is that there's not enough care and attention taken to the quality of your photography. We're in an image-driven society. Your brand image isn't just your logo. It is absolutely how you photograph those bedrooms. It is totally how you do your rooms with views. And please don't have the floral arrangement vases artfully arranged on a table, on a terrace, with the kind of half-cut orange and all the rest of it. It just begins to look so cliched now. I think invest, if you're going to make some investments, because you've got to get out there and market your image, please invest in your photography. It's a big plea. We, at Condé Nast Traveler, see hundreds and hundreds of hotel images supplied by the hoteliers coming in. I'm sure you find exactly the same thing. And often we simply can't use them. That's why we go and take them ourselves.
Things have, however, got better, and I hope you're enjoying some of the slides that you can see behind us, because they are excellent examples.
Half of Condé Nast has some.
That's right. And there are a lot of iconic hotel images there that you will recognise immediately, because the branding that a lot of you use is actually the picture of, or the image of, the hotel itself. And there are some very good examples that have been flashing before your eyes.
Now, I'm very happy to take some questions, as I know Andrew is, in this very informal chat here on stage. So we'd like to be, you know, welcoming and inclusive and take on board the fact that...
I'm going to take a more senior position in
the OK.
Encourage some questions if there are any. Who would like to throw a question or a comment to our publishing experts? Well, in that case, I will ask you one while you're thinking of one, which is, to what extent have your magazine and your hotel guides reflected a trend towards the stay-at-home break? Because certainly I think most of us in this room have noticed more people who are UK residents taking short breaks in this country, perhaps not in London, I can't speak for London, I don't know, than in previous years. And I certainly know a lot of people who are taking fewer foreign trips.
Spring, there will be a lot of people who are planning to spend a break in the UK who will then do it. And I sincerely hope from all our perspectives that that's right.
I think a lot of our readers are cutting back on their travel overseas, but that doesn't mean that they expect, within Britain, any travel, but it doesn't mean that they expect the quality of the experience they get when they get there to be any less.
But
and
Sarah,
I think that's an incredibly important difference. They're travelling less frequently, whether it's within Britain or abroad, but they still want to spend the same level of money with added value when they get there.
Right. And are you giving more space to editorial coverage of UK opportunities than in the past?
Yes, we've grown over the past 2 years, in fact, a section called The Weekender, which is very specifically for those quick weekend breaks outside of major kind of areas where most people live. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about London and flash cars on the streets of Park Lane and how, in fact, we're not really witnessing the feel of the recession in London. It's not quite the same elsewhere in the country. I mean, there are parts of the country where there are beautiful hotels who are really feeling the pinch. And certainly one of the things that we're trying to address in the magazine is that you can have a first-class experience without actually spending huge amounts of money. But it's tough. I mean, I absolutely acknowledge it.
You tried to catch my eye just then, Rupert Elliott. Did you have a question?
There's one over there.
Richard Ball, thank you.
Yeah, I've got a question, probably for Andrew, but probably for both of you. The advance of customer feedback sites like TripAdvisor, etc., how do you see these? And do you think there's a serious chance that in the future people will take more notice of that kind of direct report from consumers rather than editorial coverage?
That's a very good question. I, from our perspective, I think TripAdvisor is very important. I think if it weren't there, somebody else would have invented it. Quite simply, people do like to give their opinions. We have an area on our website where we ask for our users' opinions of the properties they've stayed in, a similar thing.
And do you publish any unfavourable comments?
No, we don't. We edit everything because we're the business we are. We believe in the positive view rather than negative. But no, TripAdvisor is a worthwhile, in my view, worthwhile marketing tool. We get a lot of feedback from even today on those little paper guest surveys. They still come back in their thousands because people do like to comment on their stay. I have to say from our
words of wisdom on how wonderful a place is on behalf of their clients, and I've become deeply suspect of TripAdvisor, I'm afraid. I see its relevance, I see its point, but I would far rather go to a hotel website and see what people have said about the hotels, knowing that it's been edited, and at least that's a kind of clear and obvious and transparent beauty contest, if you like, than what could be TripAdvisor, where you don't really know who said what, and for legal reasons, a lot of the stuff doesn't really get put up.
Another yes, question down. Geoffrey Crockett.
Do you think
just have to boom.
In the next 10 years, do you think the star rating system is going to become more or less relevant?
Good question.
You want to take that?
Well,
I'll take it off.
We, as you know, Geoffrey, have never believed in a star rating at all. We believe that if you put a benchmark or you put a mark of excellence against something, a little bit like the old-fashioned Good Housekeeping mark of excellence, those of you might remember it, it was a standard which is recognised internationally, and that's what we've done with Johansson's. Quite simply, if it's recommended by us, the guest has an expectation which hopefully is reflected or mirrored by the service they buy. So we've kept quite neatly out of what appears to be an absolute jungle out there of various ways of rating properties.
On the star system, I mean, of course it exists in so many different forms. I think it's a bit like the word luxury. It's overused, overplayed. You've got 7 stars, you've got 5 stars. Which system are you going to use? A reset? With brands like Michelin, where it's very clear what it's been, and actually I think it's wavering now even a little bit, what does it mean? Again, like Andrew, if it's been in Condé Nast Traveller, then it means you can trust us because we've edited it out.